Joining us today is famed jewelry designer Erica Courtney. She has been named as one of the top three jewelry designers in the world today, and we have the opportunity to learn about Erica's journey from single motherhood to renowned jewelry designer. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And I wanted to start out by saying I've been reading about your story, and I'm very inspired by your journey, and I would like for you to share with us your journey to become a famous jewelry designer. When did you start making jewelry, and what has been and who has been your inspiration?
Well, I started about 27 years ago. I was just playing on my kitchen table. My mom was visiting, and I glued some Austrian crystal from a broken necklace on a pair of sunglasses, and we went out for the day, and people told me they loved my sunglasses, and my mom told every—I mean, it was the 80s. It was kind of glamorous.
Yeah.
And my mom told everybody I was a jewelry designer, much to my chagrin. I totally didn't want her to do that, and I was totally horrified because I didn't know what she was going to—you know, people are going to want to buy them from me, and I'm not a jewelry designer.
Right. So then what happened after that?
Well, so then I started buying sunglasses later after a few pairs, buying things at retail and reselling them. She forced me into going to buying them wholesale, and I went into a showroom, and he was selling me the sunglasses, asking me what I'm going to do with them, and I wouldn't tell him until after I did it, so nobody would copy what I was going to do. So I kind of went in afterwards, and I was using still broken jewelry, so you have a lot of stuff, but I was trying to get the cheaper parts, you know, that were broken already, and a box for $10 or whatever. But there's a lot of pieces that aren't good after that, you know? So I went in there with my sunglasses and back in the showroom, and I was ready, guns a-blazing. I'm doing this. You're having me in the showroom, and that's final. And he said, oh, yeah, they're cute. And I just backed up and said, oh, my God, I am not a jewelry designer. I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm doing this. I was ready more for him telling me no than him telling me yes. He finally said, fine, well, if you'll make them for our clients, then I'd love to have you.
So is this like a wholesale designer showroom, or was it a full retail kind of showroom?
It was wholesale. It was wholesale, so we would be selling to stores. And so I joined them for their next trade show. Of course, I didn't have a dollar, you know, but I, while I was, you know, waiting for somebody to order my jewelry, I was selling everybody else's jewelry and making up stories about it as I went along, and he hired me as the manager. Which was great because I needed the money, you know, but he hired me as the manager, which was awkward for the manager, who was now demoted.
Oh, no.
I know. It was really heartbreaking, but what could I do?
Mm-hmm. And you were a single mom at the time.
Absolutely. So I definitely needed a job, whatever that was.
Oh, my gosh. And then what was the next step after that?
Well, I just continued on that journey a little bit and tried as hard as I could to make it sort of like a style, but it takes a certain kind of woman to wear glasses like that. Mm-hmm. And then there was the issue of the not-so-great Austrian crystals that I was using out of broken jewelry. So I started ordering some from Swarovski. Mm-hmm. And then my mom wanted one of these big Fossil watches. Fossil was a brand new company. She said, I want that big Fossil watch with the big numbers on it so I can see it without my glasses and put your stones on my watch. So there's my mom again.
Right.
So finally, I made her a watch, and I made myself one. And I would walk around the showroom, and people would always talk about the watch. And so sometimes when people would come in, I'd just put my hand over the watch because I don't sell watches. I sell sunglasses. And I finally said, oh, my God, what am I doing? What am I doing? Everybody wants the watch. So I asked Fossil if I could have 50 watches. And then which I didn't have two dimes to rub together, but I thought if I'm going out, I'm going out big, you know? If I'm going to be in, I'm going to be in big. And I called Swarovski and asked them if I could have credit because I couldn't possibly afford these rhinestones, these crystals. So they said, sure, you've been doing COD long enough. And so I made 50 watches, and I thought, well, I'll sell 45 of them, hopefully as samples, so I could get the money to pay both these companies back and keep five as samples. And, you know, so I did that. And what happened so, of course, I had the money to pay both of them, which I was so excited about. And I got orders for hundreds of watches, which for me was like millions. Then the people that took them home to their stores, I sold another 150 in two more days. And I just was in total shock because, like, their customers would come in and they'd go, look at this watch, isn't it fabulous? So then Fossil made me do it with my name on it, which was completely horrible because then they wanted the cash up front because he didn't have any money.
Oh, really?
At all. So how could he afford to finance me and give me terms of 30 days or anything like that? That was impossible for him.
And this is when he just started out too?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Very interesting. That's what I did. And prayed that I could possibly sell these before Christmas. It was August, mm-hmm. and I sold all of them by the end of the month and ordered 300 more, but then I couldn't get any more before Christmas. So I sold 800 before Christmas came. And I was sitting around in December waiting for another shipment of watches for January. It was unbelievable. And I sold at least tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of watches. I never counted. Absolutely tons of them.
If you were working in the showroom during the day, selling the watches, obviously, when did you have time to actually sit down and make them and design them and do that part of it?
Well, that's super simple. All you have to do is get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and work for an hour and a half, get your kid up, get him fed, take him to school, come back, get dressed, go to work, go pick him up after work, fix dinner, and work till 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning. No big deal.
Just nonstop.
Just nonstop.
No sleeping allowed.
No, absolutely no sleeping. I just couldn't. What could I do? Right. I had to make a living, and I was not willing to work two jobs for the rest of my life.
Was that your passion? Were you doing your passion?
Well, I didn't know it at the time, but yes, I loved it. I always loved Swarovski crystal. Uh-huh. Always, always. When I was younger, one of my neighbors gave me all her Swarovski jewelry, so I just went crazy. I couldn't believe she would ever give me a thing like that. It was so precious and wonderful. So I always had a passion for jewelry, but I never wanted to be a jewelry designer because I didn't know I could.
Right.
It was not something offered to young ladies, you know, growing up. If you were a professional woman, you would hope to be a secretary or a receptionist.
Right. That's so true. How do you get that training anyway?
I would have had no idea. I didn't know there was any training offered or available. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know if there was back then in the 70s when I first graduated from high school. I didn't know about any jewelry training. But plus, that was more crafty jewelry. It wasn't fine jewelry at all. I mean, I did take a jewelry class when I was 11 at the Catholic Youth Organization.
That qualifies.
That qualifies. I mean, you know, I have training. Right. So I didn't need any more training. And I didn't sell it when I was in school. Right. You know, but, and so did my sister. She was 9.
Well, then when did you make the jump from making more like craft kind of jewelry, like you say, to the really expensive jewelry that you now make? What was that process?
I met a guy in a rock and roll band in Texas, in Dallas, where I lived, and he lived in L.A. Mm-hmm. And after he hung out in Dallas for 10 days, I was going to L.A., and he was going to be my boyfriend. Not that he asked me to be his girlfriend. That was just it for me, and I packed up in about 3 weeks and took 3 people that wanted to come with me to L.A., and we moved to L.A. just like that. Of course, he became my boyfriend. We stayed together for 13 and a half years, and we got married and the whole nine yards. When I got to L.A., the inspiration was totally different, and the vibe was kind of different, and I just couldn't pull it together in some way to do what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Plus, I think the styles were changing, and so I was trying to make white metal castings out of wax. First, you start with wax and you make a silver piece and then you take it to white metal caster because I did costume jewelry.
Right.
I was sitting at my table kind of in a daydream and writing love notes on the pieces because they weren't going to be worth anything to me anyway. Right. I didn't like what I was doing, so I just started writing love notes to this boyfriend of mine. My assistant came over and she goes, "Oh my God, I so want that in silver." And I was like, "We can't sell silver. You know, it's cheap. The Mexican market is $10 for big giant earrings, and I'm not about to go there.
Right.
I can't compete with, you know, their labor and all that stuff." So she goes, "I so want that in silver." And I was like, "No, we're not going to do that." And about 10 minutes later, I said, "You know what? Maybe we need to start a new trend in this world, and that's designer silver." And so I started designer silver, and it was way more expensive. I mean, I couldn't compete. We didn't have those labor practices here where people don't make so much money. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Where does the silver come from when you're saying it's designer silver?
From me. Sort of like Wolfgang said, how do you get a $12 hamburger? Because I made it. That's how.
I made it.
Okay. You know, and plus that, it's a whole different ball game. You know, it's not stamped out. It's not, it's thought out. It was different and special. And
So that was a new line, Designer Silver.
Yeah. Yeah, it was still called Erica Courtney, but it was Designer Silver, meaning it didn't cost $5. It cost a lot more than $5, but it was something super special and super... some of the earrings were so tiny, it was impossible to charge a markup. You know, they would have been, I don't know how much, but, you know, in any event, that's where Designer Silver was born. Oh, and plus I owed a lot of money from the move.
Oh, no.
So in order to pay that back, this was another one of my big moves where I had to decide if you're going out, you're going out in flames. And if you're going in, you're going in with flames, you know. So I had to pay back those other vendors. And I had to, since I was doing a new collection, charge more money to pay back those people. Hence, there is no one in this industry I owe even a dollar to, even back then when... It would have been easy to stiff them because I was never going to see them again.
That takes a lot of integrity. That's wonderful to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I have to say I went to go look at your beautiful jewelry yesterday, which I loved. I'm just curious because now I see you using a lot of these really precious gemstones. So what was that inspiration?
Well, what happened with the silver is it sort of grew organically with one diamond. And then I didn't really like what was out there in gold and platinum. So I made myself a gold piece and put a diamond on there. And then the next thing you know, I paved it. And that wasn't really my style to wear these gold and diamonds and all that stuff. It just, I was way more on the rocker side and, you know, kind of still am. I just, you know, more sophisticated. But so because of that, I sort of invented a new kind of gold and precious jewelry, but I was still selling it in dress shops. And they were like, how am I going to sell these $300 earrings? They're gold, you know, and $1,200. I was like, well, you sold it in costume. You know, they were $300 and, you know, even $500 in costume. And this is just real. But I'm not a jewelry store. And I said, well, girl, you're doing it. Just do it. And the next thing you know, these beautiful dress shops became, and some not so beautiful, became selling fine jewelry. But it was sort of like a no man's land kind of fine jewelry. As I grew up and did different things, and it just kept getting more and more refined and more sophisticated and more with the times. What I was doing then was great, but it's just not really the style. I mean, people do things like what I used to do these days, but I'm just... following my heart and doing what I want to do. And this is what I want to do. And I want to make heirlooms for you to pass down. I want to buy precious gems sometimes before you know they're famous and sometimes even after. Almost every gemstone that wasn't fashionable that I ever bought is now extremely fashionable and extremely expensive.
How did the movie stars start collecting your jewelry? That's exciting too. Tell me about some of those names and stories that of people who are collecting your jewelry now.
Well, it's the list is shorter who doesn't, you know, and they don't all buy it. Some of them just borrow it. Anybody you can think of.
Have you gotten to know them?
Some of them. Kathy Griffin is a really good friend of mine, and she's fabulous. She doesn't like to borrow. She likes to buy. She wants it to be hers. And I don't blame her, although she does borrow sometimes, but she's a big jewelry lover and buyer, and she wears it, and I love that about her. You know, it's just super great to see somebody buying something. I mean, here she is on stage, and she's going to remember that years down the line. I bought this when, and jewelry does bring back those feelings. I mean, I've heard 100 times a woman say to me, yes, with a big smile, I got these pearls when my husband and I were in Barbados or wherever they were. I hate him, but you know what? That was such a great trip. You know, we're divorced. But terrible. They're smiling the whole time they're talking about their purchase. And I just think that's so wonderful that it can bring back such good memories. It always brings back a smile, always.
When you think about collecting jewelry, or even when maybe your mom hands down your grandma's wedding ring.
Yeah.
You know, that's exciting.
It's, I say, I don't care if that diamond is 5 points, that's your most priceless piece of jewelry because you cannot replace that. I can replace it 100 times over, but it'll never be your grandmother's.
Right.
So it's priceless. And you know what I've been doing lately? Mm-hmm. My mom passed away 2 years ago almost. And as my sister and I were going through her jewelry, she would go on trips around the world practically naked and, you know, with nothing in her suitcase and buy all these beautiful clothes for us and herself and all this beautiful jewelry. And because she only had a wedding band on, she had to buy a chain for every charm. So here I was with all these chains and charms. And I was looking at the chains going, now what am I going to do with the Omega chain and a rope chain and a sparkly rope chain and a this chain and here's my great grandfather's watch chain. And all of a sudden this image came to my head. I saw the clasp kind of being invented before my eyes. And I told my sister, I was kind of watching it go up, and I told my sister, oh my God, do you want a bracelet like that? And I pointed to the air where I was seeing it in front of me. And she said, like, what? I said, oh my God, I just have to make this bracelet. You'll love it. And I'm going to put mom's chains on it and put some diamond chains on it and put great grandpa's watch chain on it. And it's this gorgeous, very current bracelet. But every time I wear it, I think about my mom, and I wear it every day just about. And then I took my dad's wristwatch and I put it in a big pendant because I always wanted to wear this wristwatch. It's gold and but I don't really like it, you know? It's not my style. So I made a big, beautiful pendant out of it, and both of them won prizes, one at the Couture Show, which is our big, fancy trade show in Vegas, and one of them from the Women's Jewelry Association, because it was called Green Diva Award, and that was using older pieces of jewelry and refurbishing them into something different. And, you know, the people that are doing that, a lot of times aren't really trying to be green per se, but they want something memorable, and they're not even trying to save money, really. They just want something memorable and something precious and cherished.
And unique.
Yes, and absolutely
one of
unique.
A kind, yeah.
Yeah, because I can make you my bracelet, but it doesn't have my mom's chains on it. I'll use your mom's.
Right. So do you do that for people? You take things that they've given you that they cherish, and then you remake it into something unique for them?
Yes, always.
What do they call that?
Well, I call it repurpose, relove.
Repurpose, relove. That's a good idea.
Yeah, because then you will really relove it, you know? I mean, even old tennis bracelets and those 80s horrible bracelets that are gold and platinum or gold and white gold or those, I've done that in one of those bracelets and it's really great. And I mean, people have jewelry boxes full of stuff they're not using, and they are diamonds, and it is gold. And then what we do is we melt down the gold to put against your purchase, because I'm not a gold person, you know, person that buys gold. So I'm doing it just to help you buy it. They do it because that's how they make money. So, you know, for the most part, almost every dime goes towards your purchase. So that's nice. Even if it's $1,000, it's $1,000. What are you going to do with 2 inches of chain?
When you say you don't use the gold,
no, I don't use the gold. We send it to the refiner. The place that I buy it at uses 99% of the gold that I use in my collection, and platinum probably too, but I'm not going to swear to that. But gold for sure is recycled.
Oh.
And so we take it to the refiner and everything is taken out and it all turns back into 24 karat pure gold, and then we buy it again. You know, because you can't keep mixing it in a pot. We use our own special gold color combination. And then plus that it's sort of tainted after a while and it's not as strong and it becomes a little brittle. So you don't really want to keep melting gold over and over and over. So you refine it and take all the alloys out and start over.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it sounds like you have a self-taught education. And did you start taking classes? Did you go work with other jewelers? How did you teach yourself about the gems and the gold? And
well, it was self-taught, and there was a sapphire dealer that really helped me to begin with. But then again, when I would find some of those unusual gemstones, he would say, you are not about to pay that for any spessartite garnet. I don't care what it's called. That's too much money. And I was like, no, I'm serious. This is great. You should see this stuff. And he's like, absolutely not. Take it back. I'm not looking. And I would, you know, learn from the gem dealers and take his advice, but then do what I wanted to do. And now spessartite is not only mined out, but 10 times more expensive. He didn't understand it because he was in such the precious, precious, precious gem world.
The opal.
No, the sapphire dealer.
Oh, sapphire dealer.
And, but I saw it with a different eye, and I saw how sparkly they were, and I saw the gem quality in things that were new and really just undiscovered by the public, and made them discovered. And made, I mean, they're gorgeous. They're orange. They're, some of them are a little bit rusty reds, but, you know, the orange are the most beautiful in my book. Mm-hmm. They're super sparkly and super rare, and not everybody's going to have them. Not everybody, it's not going to look good on everybody. Not everybody's going to have it. Mm-hmm. And it, for people that have everything or want something special, there you go.
Where are they mined at?
I think in Madagascar. And I think maybe a couple of other places too. But there's so many other gemstones that are new these days that mm-hmm. there aren't a lot of them, but I do so many one-of-a-kinds mm-hmm. that I can have three gemstones that are color-change garnets that you can't get production of.
Right.
And only you have that.
Wow.
You know, and only you have it in that ring. I don't make the, mm-hmm. if I have three color-change stones, they're not going to be all the same thing. And probably you're going to take them anyway. You're going to probably make earrings out of them and a ring so that you have the set, because I'm never going to be able to get it for you again.
That is incredible.
It
you
is.
Go around the world to find your gems, don't you?
I do. I do. I mean, there is a gem show here in Tucson, but you got to know what you're doing because it's so overwhelming. You'll be broke before you get 10 steps into it, you know?
That would be me.
Yeah. I mean, the first time I went, I was beside myself. I didn't know what to do. And now I know more what to do and how to do it. And it's very difficult. And it's difficult to know who to buy from and mm-hmm. who to trust. And, you know, for them, they have a great interest in making sure that they give me the right deal so I'll come back, because they know that I buy those kinds of things. For mm-hmm. people they don't know, they don't have a great interest in possibly giving you a good deal or a fair price.
Have you ever been gypped or ripped off in that sense?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's good. That's
no,
good to know, because I think that's kind of scary to buy a gem and you're trusting somebody that they're telling you it is what it is.
Well, for the most part, I would never investigate further. For the most part, after I buy things, I might be going across, you know, around the gem show mm-hmm. even more. Mm-hmm. And if right. I find out something's not exactly right, it will mm-hmm. go exactly back, you know. But I
oh,
can't
I
say there's a piece in my collection I paid too much for, therefore mm-hmm. it costs too much.
Oh, I see.
It would have to go right back. And if they have any interest in ever doing business with me again, and that would be ever, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. they would make sure and make it right, you know.
So true.
And sometimes it's an honest mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I can deal with that, but you're taking it back.
When you say it's overwhelming, is there really that many gemologists in the world, you know, selling gemstones?
They're not all gemologists. So,
oh, okay.
Yes, there are, you know, down to, in Tucson, for instance, it's down to big giant geodes and mm-hmm. alligator bones and meteorites and all kinds of stuff. There's so much to go through and so much to find.
Mm-hmm.
But in some of the higher-end shows, like in Germany, everything is good. Everything is expensive. There are no deals mm-hmm. because they are the famous gem cutters of the world. And in fact, even my German stone dealers, when I went to Germany for the first mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. the first thing I was like, where did all of this come from? What is that? And they go, oh, Americans don't really appreciate fine gemstones. And I was like, what? I buy all your beautiful, expensive, gorgeous, unusual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, but you're the only one. And I was like, no, I can't possibly be the only one.
Mm-hmm.
So even to this day, if that's what I want, I have mm-hmm. to go to Germany.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, if I want purple alexandrite, I have to go to Hong Kong. If I want certain things, I have to go somewhere else to different gem shows, because they save, the Asian market loves alexandrite and color change garnet, mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they save all those things for the Asian market.
Oh, that's interesting. Because they know that's where their buyers are going to be.
Yeah, and they save what they think we like
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
over here.
Right.
So I have a lot of super collectible stones that you'll never see on your friend. And they don't necessarily mean they're expensive.
Okay.
But they are the right price is what they are.
Right.
And then I specialize in making the settings and things like that where there's hundreds of diamonds and something. So the piece of jewelry you have is a conversation piece and a piece of art. And it's not to be compared with
right.
something you find in jewelry that's made overseas or lower end marketplaces.
I just have to say this. Are you in Talo Piggott's gallery year round?
I am. When I'm here, there's as with any store, there's a huge collection here. But if you ever saw anything and I left
mm-hmm.
with the jewelry, then she could call it in immediately.
So what is your website?
ericacourtney.com.
Okay.
And then there's Facebook and Twitter.
Okay. So there's lots of ways to find you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do answer my own Facebook and my own Twitter, and it's a lot of fun. I'm having fun with it.
Oh, that's good. And I can attest to that. I saw her do that this morning right here in the studio.
Yes, that's right. I was Facebooking and Twittering about being on here with you.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for coming and joining us. It's great talking to you.
You are so very welcome. I had a great time. All right. Thanks.